Good morning. Welcome back to your home for Common Sense Radio. The Michael Duke Show. Oh, man. What is, what's happening? What's going on? How are you? Lots of stories today. Lots of stories. Oh, my God. I just saw this headline. Sorry, I was like a shiny object in a room full of shiny objects. Sorry, I just saw this headline. Heavy backpacks could affect children's future health. I'm just sorry. Ultimately, you could set up an overuse injury, which could lead to arthritis. I mean, what are you putting in a kid's backpack? I mean, rocks? Heavy backpack? I don't know. Anyway. All right. Sorry. So easily distracted this morning. Do not show me anything shiny today. That's all I'm saying. Today is like the crime edition of the program. That's what I felt like. We're looking at all the stories. We're placing, you know, kind of planning things out this morning. And it's like theft, robbery, theft, robbery, more theft. It's just like one thing, scamming, you know, murder. Welcome to Alaska. It's weird, but it just seems like this is the headlines that we're seeing these days, a lot of them. So we're going to hit on some stories that are national level stories that are affecting Alaska. And plus all the local stuff, it's going to be interesting to see. All right, so let's tell you what we got guest wise today. Josh Walton with the Alaska GOP is coming up in this hour. We're going to talk with him a little bit about special session, which is supposed to go on today, starting at 11 a.m. Some of the priorities, some of the discussions is coming up, and the 2018 elections. Because make no mistake about it, some of the people down there are already, they're already juggling, you know, the ideas of what they're going to be doing for the next upcoming election in 2018. Some people are already trying to make some plans. I can tell you already. In hour two, we're going to be talking with Samuel Hudson, who's going to be talking about Alaska VA healthcare screenings. Kind of a community effort. We're going to talk about that. Nat Herz follows him with the Alaska Dispatch News at about 7:44. And then at 8:24, Pastor Mickey is going to be joining us with the Frontline Mission out there in Wasilla. We're going to be talking about the Christmas in July food drive. We're going to get the full details on this because this is a really good opportunity to give back. We're giving people in this state. We really are. And the communities, the South Central communities, are all very big on helping out. And this is a great opportunity for you to do just that. They're going to be all set up out in the Walmart parking lot in the Valley on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And our sister station, Q99.7, is going to be out there as well helping out with Frontline. Frontline does a huge job, and we're going to get all the details from Pastor Mickey on that in the third hour of the program today. But let's just say I walked through the facility here, I guess it was about 10 days ago, got the full nickel tour, as it were, and I see exactly what they're doing there to help people in the Valley. They do an amazing job out there, absolutely an amazing job of taking care of folks and helping feed families that need it. The lady out there who's the director, Nanette, she told me, she goes, you know, this is equal opportunity. We've helped people who are, you know, driving with all their possessions in the car, and we've helped people who've driven in with, you know, driving a Cadillac, because hard times falls on everybody sometimes. And you just don't know. And with the economy going up and down, sometimes, you know, people may need a hand up, just a little bit of a hand up. And That's how they work. And they're feeding people for like $3 a meal. I mean, it's an amazing, they do an amazing job over there. But obviously it all comes, you know, there's we got to help them out. And so Christmas in July food drive is one of the ways that we're doing it. Again, out at the Walmart parking lot in Wasilla this Saturday from 10 to 6. And Q is actually kind of competing against our sister stations in Anchorage, here in Anchorage, which would be KFAT and Bob and the Moose, because they are also doing a Christmas in July food drive, but they're doing those down at the Midtown Walmart. So it's like Battle of the Cans. Who could collect the most canned food? And I know you Valley residents are, you're a proud bunch. You're a proud bunch. And you can do it. You can do it. You could beat these guys in town. Come on. Just give a few cans of food. Frontline Mission is going to do a lot of good with what you're going to help them out with. We're going to be talking with Pastor Mickey in Hour 3. And then you can come out again on Saturday from 10 to 6 at the Wasilla Walmart and get it done. Thanks to AAA Moving and Storage for helping out. They're gonna pick up all the food, and they're going to put it out, and they're going to weigh it, and we'll know exactly how much we got by weight and all that stuff. So that's coming up. All right, so Josh Walton, Samuel Hudson, the VA, Nat Herz of the Alaska Dispatch News, Pastor Mickey, big guest today. On top of that, all these stories and the latest projections from the Anchorage Economic Development Corp. I spent almost, I was going to say about 2.5 hours yesterday. I spent at the AEDC lunch. I didn't even get a chance to wait. I was waiting for the keynote speaker, but I had to. I had to move on with my day after about two and a half hours there. I had to go. So, but I did get a chance to see the report from Bill Popp with the Alaska Economic Development Corp about their projections, their 3-year projections. Eric, put a note on your notepad there to contact AEDC. We do need to try and get Bill Popp on to talk about this because it's. Well, let's just say it's not great news. All right. Let's just say it's not it's not the greatest news. Now, it is AEDC's job to try and, you know, I guess I shouldn't say spin some of these numbers. It's not AEDC's job to it is their job to try and put the best face on some of these numbers. But I will tell you right now that this is not great. The Anchorage Consumer Optimism Index, which to me was one of the most interesting components of this entire report, tells kind of a grim tale moving forward. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go forward here. It's not looking fantastic in a lot of ways. But since the entire system is based on consumer confidence, I don't want to turn you too down on the dauber. All right. So we'll talk about that, though, here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to kind of suss out some of the numbers and some things that I thought were important. And, you know, some of the things that I guess struck me when it was all said and done. I guess that's it. I want to get to some of these headlines because of this. I mean, I was just so struck last night and this morning as I was throwing some stories together here and taking a look at what I wanted to talk about this morning. And like I said, this is like the true crime edition of the Michael Duke Show. Let's hit it.
Time now for Michael Duke's Bullet Points, your daily ammo drop for everything from water cooler discussion to cocktail conversation.
All right, so here's what the headlines read like. Group pleads guilty to Anchorage ATM thefts. One in jail after APD responds to robbery report. Suspect in custody after Juno cruise ship death. Willow woman scammed of $72,000 by door-to-door pavers. And a driver of a van in Petersburg now being charged with murder. I mean, this is... Welcome to True Crime Alaska Style. It's just like, this is the stories that are hitting all over the place. And it kind of saddens me in a lot of ways. Let's hit it with a top here from KTVA. A group of four people responsible for ATM thefts in several local banks pleaded guilty in court on Tuesday. According to the Department of Justice, four individuals ages 26 to 29, I'm not even going to name them because there's no sense in giving them a little bit more notoriety, were all charged and pleaded guilty to possession of stolen bank property, which is a federal crime, by the way. According to the documents filed in court, the main guy, his name is Turnbow, bragged to friends that he had stolen several ATMs from local banks starting in late December, which is the number one. Have you never read a crime story before? Never talk about the crimes to anybody. Well, he told them he even stole construction equipment, some from former employers, to remove the heavy machines. In March, he was attempting to pull off what may have been his fourth ATM theft at the First National Bank of Alaska on Piper Street, but a security guard spotted him in a front-end loader attempting to remove the ATM in the drive-thru at about 6 a.m. Police responded, and he stepped on the gas and lodged the loader in a snowbank. He tried to flee but was arrested by police. Turns out that he had another ATM already in his possession but had been unable to open it. So he put it in the back of his truck and covered it with a tarp. Then, this guy's a genius, he reported the truck stolen after it had been stolen from his property in Big Lake. It was stolen by three of his compatriots, people that he knew, apparently that he'd been bragging to. Turns out when it's all said and done, they got all four of them. They've all been federal felonies now, right? But now, apparently, all of them, he admitted that they all used heroin and were trying to get money to buy more drugs. So, yeah. You know, just more of the same. Oh, early this morning, late last night, and reported on early this morning by KTVA, Anchorage police were called into a robbery of the area's 16th Avenue south of Beaver Place. Reported the suspect car was seen driven away from the scene of a crime by the officers who responded to the incidents. They were able to block the car in. They said in an email that after officers conducted all interviews of people inside the car and the victim, they said the robbery incident was determined to be inconclusive. So one person is remanded to jail and the two others were released. So I don't really know exactly what's happening with that, but what are you going to do? Oh, this is the other one. This is like the bonus round. Two men charged, one sought in separate Anchorage rape cases. It's just like the never-ending parade of misery. What the hell is going on? Two men recently charged in separate Anchorage rape cases, according to the APD. One of them remains at large. This was as of yesterday afternoon. In an earlier of two cases, court records show that a 40-year-old Lucky Tapusio sought on a no-bail warrant for two counts of first-degree assault. And that, after thorough investigation, according to the police spokeswoman, Anchorage police detectives were able to develop enough of a probable cause to charge him. Warrants were obtained for his arrest, and they are seeking him right now. This is... bad people. Bad people doing bad things. This is what's going on. And of course, the cruise ship thing, which, hey, it's a family cruise aboard the thing. Apparently, it was a domestic dispute. I'm not going to get into it too much. Apparently, with the domestic dispute, the FBI says the suspect is now in custody. It was reported again that it was a domestic dispute, and the FBI apparently led the family off, including children, off the boat early on and took them into custody. Identities have not been released, but it was a 39-year-old woman from Utah apparently died following a domestic dispute. Man, that's a family vacation gone way wrong. All right, so that's your headlines. I mean, I feel like I just totally rained on your parade, but that's what's happening around your community right now. All right, so yesterday, the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation put out its three-year outlook luncheon. Now, they are again, their job is to kind of take the optimistic approach on things, even when they're delivering bad news, right? I mean, we know that that's part of it. I mean, their job is to try and help economic development in the area. So they're not going to come out there and tell you all the doom and gloom. So there's always a little bit of a, I don't know, I don't know. Anyway, their job is to put a little bit of a positive spin on things, right? But it's kind of hard to make chicken salad out of chicken poop. I mean, let's face it, everything comes from a chicken, but one of them does not, you know, that does not make a good thing. Now, again, this was a pretty extensive presentation by Bill Popp, president of the AEDC. And he came in and you know, kind of gave us the whole rundown. Now, so far, we are on track to lose more jobs this year than we did last year. Now, the projections, and that's how I'm reading it, based on year to year and everything else. They're saying that we're still going to be not quite as many as they did last year. But if it continues to trend the way it is right now, we have lost, as of June 30th, last year we lost 3,000 jobs, a little bit more than 3,000 jobs in 2016 in the Anchorage area. Not statewide, in the Anchorage area. Statewide, we lost closer to 7,000. But in the Anchorage area, we lost a total of about 3,000 jobs. So far this year, 6 months in, we've lost 1,600. Now, they're projecting about 2,100, but that's got a plus or minus factor to it that it could include up to an additional 2,100 jobs. So just do the math on that. For that means 5,700 jobs potentially lost in the Anchorage area on the downside. Best case, it could be only another 400 or 500, so we could be, you know, right in the 2,100 job range. The bottom line is we're going to lose more jobs. That's going on right now. Heralded or commented on by pretty much all the speakers, but by Bill Popp in general, was they laid the lion's share of the blame on this directly at the feet of the legislature for kicking the can down the road, for not developing a fiscal plan. It all came back to uncertainty. And the money quote of the whole thing was, unfortunately, this is from Bill Popp, unfortunately, due to the lack of a solution to the state's fiscal crisis being developed by the legislature and the governor, we are now projecting a third year of recession in 2018. And they're saying that by 2019, they expect that it will stabilize and potential for job growth by 2020. Now, there was some interesting commentary during this luncheon. One of the things which I found interesting was that Bill Popp poo-pooed the idea that oil prices could rebound anytime in the near future. Basically saying, I don't know who you guys are talking to, but that's just not going to happen. Now, we know that oil prices could swing one way or the other. We know that the overall trend, according to ADIA and the IEA and a lot of other major agencies, is that oil prices will continue to creep back up. We're going to be nowhere near the $150 a barrel mark. I mean, that's for sure, anytime in the near future. I don't think anybody is saying that right now. But we definitely could see oil prices in the $70 to $80 range over the next 2 to 3 years. Now, I'm not saying that we bet the farm on that whole concept, but to continue to say that, here's the argument. They're using that as an argument to say, well, oil prices are not going to recover, so we need new revenue. And that was really one of the major themes in what we saw yesterday, is that the AEDC is very much in favor of the legislature coming up with a new plan that included new revenues and utilization of the permanent fund. That was stated a couple times. So although Bill Popp didn't just outwardly come out directly and say, we need to take your permanent fund. That is the assertion, is that utilization of the permanent fund and that's their solution for this problem, because oil prices are just not going to rebound. Well, oil prices have already rebounded. I mean, in the last 2 years, oil prices went from, what was it, almost the high 20s? And now we're back up to, what, $47, $48, $50 a barrel? And projected again over the next 24 to 36 months to be somewhere in probably the $70 range. So oil prices are continuing to rebound. And the continuous problem that I see with all this, and that I think that the consumers see, is that we have all had to clip our wings. We have all had to cut back in our own households. You know, we can't necessarily buy all the things that we want to buy. We can't necessarily do all the things that we want to do, because a lot of us have taken pay cuts. Maybe some of us are unemployed or have had to change jobs. Or maybe we haven't been affected directly by that, but maybe our industry or, you know, secondarily, some of the people we do business with have taken cuts, and so that our numbers are down. Or maybe it's just the flat-out uncertainty of what's going on. And so we, as private citizens, as private industry, as private businesses, have had to make decisions in cutbacks and what we're doing. And that's a real thing. But again, I find it interesting. Now, Anchorage Economic Development Corporation is a public corporation developed in partnership with private business to try and develop, you know, economic situations that will encourage people to do business in the Anchorage area. Now, there's a whole show wrapped up in the question of whether or not the government should be trying to figure out a way to draw. Here's my thing. And let me just nutshell that whole, because that's a whole discussion right there that we could take up over a couple hours and bring guests and experts in and talk about it and everything else. But here's the thing. If you want to attract business to an area, get out of business's way. And I'm talking about government. Get out of business's way. You know, what business wants to come into an area where they're going to be taxed into oblivion, where they're going to be regulated, restricted, cajoled? That's obviously a very oversimplified version of things. But if you really want to develop, just get out of business's way. That's been a key point in a lot of times and throughout the course of history, in why people go to. You want to know why Texas is booming in a lot of ways? Why a lot of companies have been moving to Texas? Because they have very, very, very low regulations. They have very little taxes. They have a lot of things. That's why Texas has been attracting a lot of companies from places like California, who've decided to tax companies into oblivion. That Colorado has lost a lot of companies there. Companies from the East Coast have moved to Texas. Texas is looking pretty nice right now for a lot of companies. So, again, if you want to see that, that's how you do it. Okay, but let's set that whole Anchorage economic or the economic development concept aside for a second. AEDC is again a public corporation in partnership with private companies, and yet their advocacy is always for being slightly, not tainted, but influenced by the fact that they're a government agency, and so they have to they have some things that they have to answer for. And this continuing call to say it's the legislature's fault, okay, which I agree with, but then the answer is we need to come up with a long-term spending plan that includes new revenues, which is code for taxes, however you want to put it together, whether it's a tax and everything else, and specifically calling out utilization of the permanent fund, that's very troubling to me. Because now you've got a public-private partnership where they're being sponsored by major corporations in the state of Alaska who obviously want some of that burden spread off of their books, and why not just take it from the consumers instead? And maybe I'm just being cynical. Maybe I'll, full disclosure, maybe I'm just being cynical on it. But I don't think so. And I think people get it. That's my thing. I think that even if they don't understand the, you know, the microeconomics of this whole thing, people have already, they're seeing these things play out in their lives and they understand it. You want to know the number one reason why I think that that's on point? The one set of slides in this entire presentation that tells you everything, in my opinion, is the Anchorage Consumer Optimism Index. They measure the optimism of Anchorage households in the health of the local economy, their personal financial situation, and the expectations of the future. So this Anchorage Consumer Economic Optimism Index uses data collected quarterly from at least 350 households located in the muni. And they ask a series of questions, which I'm going to tell you here fairly quickly. But the bottom line is for the first time, the optimism index has dropped below the 50% mark. The index landed at, I mean, yeah, it was below the 50% mark before, but this, I think this is a new low that I don't think that they'd seen this low. The overall average of the index landed at 47.5% positive to negative. Anything below 50 is obviously recessionary and bad. Anything over 50 is good. Optimistic, not optimistic, so to speak. 47.5. And that is slightly lower than the previous record low reached in the second and third quarters of last year. So we're on a continuing downward trend as far as overall confidence. Now, we break that number out into three parts: local economy confidence, personal finance confidence, and future expectations. Interestingly enough, personal finance confidence was 62% out of 100. People are feeling pretty good about their own personal finances, but on the local economy scale, they were at about 46.9%, feeling pretty bad. But the thing that drug the entire thing down was the future expectations. The question that was asked was, do you think the economy in your community right now is getting better, getting worse, or staying the same? Oh, they think it's getting worse. 40.6%. See, I think the average people understand that this is where things are going. And that taking things like the permanent fund dividend away from the people and other things are going to have serious economic impacts. And people understand that. So their future expectations at this point are not, the future is not so bright, you got to wear shades. So, I mean, they could keep calling for all these new things, new revenues, new taxes, new this, new that. But I think people understand that what we need is we need to rein in the size and scope of what's going on, because everybody else is having to. Why shouldn't government at this point? And that's one thing I really wish some of these organizations would continue to call out for, along with the rest of the average people. Josh Walton is with the Alaska Republican Party. He's the executive director. Every week he comes in and we try and suss out some answers from him on what are you guys doing? No, not really. We just try and get a take on what's happening, what their thoughts are. Today is no different. Today, though, day one of the special, special, special session. And we're going to see what his thoughts are as the new capital budget has been released. He joins us now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So it was released yesterday, noontime. My phone started buzzing repeatedly in the middle of the AEDC luncheon. And so I'm trying to listen and read the capital budget at the same time. Some interesting things, came up. What I found most interesting about the capital budget, and I want you to comment on this specifically, was the funding mechanism. Because what we saw was instead of a draw from the constitutional budget reserve or some other mechanism that would have required a majority vote, three-quarters supermajority out of the legislature. Instead, we saw everything coming from reappropriations from various different funding sources, including the Road to Juneau, the CABA project, and others. We also saw money coming instead from the statutory budget reserve, which makes the threshold only a 50-50 point. That was one of the biggest things that stuck out to me in the report. What say you?
Well, I think that that indicates kind of where we are with the with politics in the Alaska legislature. You've got a divided House with a slim majority by the Democrats having a slim majority there. And they, as we saw with the Juneau Road for the Juneau Access Project, for example, it's pretty clear that their caucus isn't necessarily, I mean, they've got Juneau Democrat Justin Parrish, who is on the record as being a supporter of the project, but then you've got other Democrats also from Juneau and the rest of the caucus who don't support this and who weren't willing to kind of stand up with him on this project. So I guess what that indicates to me is that there's some division within their caucus. And the you know, reappropriating money from that project to other projects tells you that this is something where the freshmen in the caucus are suffering from the lack of influence. You know, but as far as choosing sources where it requires a 50-50 vote, I mean, you've got to – this is a budget that had to be – has to be passed by the Senate majority, which is dominated by Republicans, rather conservative Republicans. But it also has to be passed by a Democrat-led House majority and then signed by Governor Walker. So whatever comes through has to be something that meets that, you know, is acceptable to all three, and that is going to look a little bit like hodgepodge most times. Capital budget always kind of works out this way, where there's you know, there's a lot of wrangling over what's in it, and this time, you know, money's scarce.
Right. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because, again, one of the reasons why, you know, that there was at least a little bit of hope that something might come out of some of the wrangling during the capital budget was the expectation was that there would be at least some participation by minority members on some of this stuff. But by doing this, they've kind of sidestepped the whole issue. And I would agree with you that in part, this just kind of gives you a snapshot of the temperature of how the legislature as a whole has been dealing with things this entire session, and all the addendum sessions on top of it, is that there has been very little attempt to include the minority in this process from start to finish, especially, I mean, on the House side specifically is what I'm talking about, where they've been pretty much sidelined from the word go. I mean, right, starting in the subcommittee process, working all the way up to the actual passage of most of the budgets and the bills on their side and everything else. And it to me, it highlights the complete and total dysfunction that we have at this point in the legislature.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that one. And I think that you're absolutely right that the capital budget is one of those issues where you would generally see particularly a strong minority like the, I mean, that's a, you know, what, 18 out of the 40 House members are in the minority Republican caucus, and that's a lot of votes. That's a lot of influence. And what's happened is that the House majority has decided to sideline and try and make them as irrelevant to the process as possible, which, you know, that's, those people represent about half of, you know, almost half of the Alaskans, and they're being basically disenfranchised and shut out of the whole process. I don't think that that's a smart way to govern, and I don't think it's the correct way to govern if I'm, you know, looking at the House majority. But the what that requires is it requires the House majority to have a really strong caucus, and I don't think they have a really strong caucus. And I think you see that in some of the decisions that they've made, which have been, frankly, you know, inexplicable. The House majority started off saying, we're here to solve this fiscal crisis, and then they've persisted. They've just simply not been serious throughout the whole process about solving the fiscal crisis, and I don't really think that what we're seeing now indicates that they're serious today. I think that what we're seeing now indicates weakness on the part, you know, that this is harder than they thought it was, and that they were making promises that they didn't know how they were going to keep.
Right. What do you think about some of the rumors that have been floating around? There was some discussion about whether or not, A, there would be an increase in the capital budget to more fully fund cashable credits. There was some discussion about whether or not the Senate was going to push for something along that lines of paying out. We're hearing a lot of things from AOGA and some of the other folks on the oil and gas side about how, well, they were owed this money and everything else, and we made promises, which in some forms is correct, but we also have a statutory minimum that we have to pay when we have to pay it. There was some talk about whether or not they would bump up by the tune of $200 to $300 to $700 million, depending on who you talk to, the capital budget to help pay forward some of those. And then there was another discussion on the other side, some rumors floating around that there may be an option to try and fully fund the dividend out of the capital budget. Do you think any one of those are going to be actual real talking points today, or is this just all wishful thinking from both different sides of the equation right now?
Well, I've got to say my crystal ball is a little foggy on what's going to happen with this. It's really tough to say, and the discussions are, you know, for capital budget tend to be, you know, a little bit opaque. I mean, it's just, it's very hard to predict from the outset what's going to happen. So with, you know, the thing with the credits, I think what we're talking about are the credits that Governor Walker, the state of Alaska does owe, and that Governor Walker, you know, basically unilaterally decided, well, we're not going to pay all of these. As, you know, they're coming due, but we're not going to pay all of them. And kind of kick paying basically the minimum, but kicking down the road payment on the ones that are above the minimum. So we're kind of basically paying, it's like making the minimum payment on your credit card, but that's still right there. You still have to pay
right
it.
Exactly.
And there's no question about that. Someday we're going to have to write that check. So there's, you know, it might be responsible to pay some of those down, but at the same time, you know, if my money's tight, maybe that's what you do. Maybe you pay the minimum. And wait until you can, you know, as long as you've got some sort of a plan in place or trying to do something that's going to help you pay for it later on. As far as fully funding the permanent fund, you know, I certainly would like to see my permanent fund dividend fully funded. We'll see what they can do. But as I said, you know, it's really tough to predict. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I'm still not sure which direction I'd bet at this point.
Right. We're talking with Josh Walton from the Alaska Republican Party about what's going on here in the state of Alaska and more. We're going to watch very closely what happens during the special session today in what is purported or hoped to be a 1 or 2 day session. They're supposed to. The governor said yesterday at the AEDC luncheon that he hopes to have a capital budget on his desk by the end of the week. Which is tomorrow, maybe Saturday, I guess, would still be part of the work week for the legislature. But we'll have to see. I mean, what I'm looking for right now is I can already see the handwriting on the wall for some of the posturing that's going to be going on for the 2018 elections already. The question I was talking with a legislative insider yesterday at the luncheon, and the question that she raised was, you know, who's going to be peeling off from this vote? Because now they only require a 50% vote. Who's going to be peeling off as in a way to try and position themselves coming up into the 2018 election to say that they were for or against, you know, specific things based on this budget? So we'll be watching that kind of closely on the 2018 election front. Before we run out of time, though, I do want to kind of talk about one of the biggest things that's hit, not just here in the state, but obviously made waves all across the U.S., and that was Senator Lisa Murkowski's vote on the Senate floor in regards to advancing the Obamacare repeal bill out onto the floor for discussion. Quite honestly, Josh, what I was surprised about was not about her vote. What I was surprised about was how many people were surprised about her vote. Because I could pretty much see this coming, and it was no surprise to me, but a lot of people seemed outraged. Even Alaska's own Republican Party was obviously very disappointed in what's going on. Give us your thoughts.
Well, I'll tell you, I did hear from a lot of people who were very frustrated with both the outcome overall and her vote in particular. Got a lot of calls on that yesterday. And, you know, the Republican Party platform is clear for the state and nationwide. We oppose Obamacare. We want to see it repealed. Now, that doesn't mean, just to give you a little bit of a caveat, that doesn't mean that if that a Republican elected official has to vote against Obamacare every chance, every time that they see it, and that it has, you know, that you don't have the, as a legislator, you don't have the flexibility to decide how and when you want to actually implement that. And Senator Murkowski's justification was a justification about process. The question is, and I think that this is a decision that every Alaskan has to make in their own mind, is whether or not they see whether or not that's an argument or a rationale for it that they agree with. And I think a lot of it is going to come down to, you know, what actually happens in the end, right? I mean, I'll tell you one thing. I personally don't like Obamacare, and I'd like to see it gone. So I would have, you know, in my heart of hearts, I would have liked to have seen that vote go a little different way. But, you know, there's a lot I'll forgive if it turns out that at the end of the day, Obamacare eventually does go away. I don't really care how it happens. I just want to see it happen. And I think a lot of Republicans are there with that. The problem is we can't look at it now and say we know what's going to happen there. And we can't look at it now and say that vote looks like it brought us closer to the goal we all want, which is Obamacare gone. So I don't know. It's one we have to watch. And, you know, I think Senator Murkowski, you know, she made her decision to vote based off of, you know, I think she has good reasons. I don't, you know, at least that she sees she does. And the question is just whether Alaskan Republicans agree with her on those.
Well, part of her reasoning was because of the lack of transparency in the production of the bill, which I agree with. I mean, I don't know if I would have voted the way she voted, but I agree with her assertion that the problem with this is that there was no process. It was all done behind the doors. There was no committees. There was no public input. And it was basically sprung on everybody the next. I think it was almost at some point a protest vote.
Yeah, could very well be. And the proof's going to be in the pudding is things, because this is going to come back up again. Skinny repeal is coming up soon, and we're just going to have to watch and see what happens. So well, I encourage everybody to wait.
Yep, we'll be watching it. Josh Walton, Alaska GOP, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you joining us. What'll be interesting is what are the ramifications of Murkowski's vote. We'll talk more about that coming up next in Hour 2, The Michael Duke Show. Lots of stuff to talk about this morning if you're just joining us. Just finished up a good conversation with Josh Walton from the Alaska GOP about what's going on with all the stuff in the Capitol budget, the special session, and Lisa Murkowski's vote on the Obamacare repeal. It's an interesting. We're going to get into that. It's an interesting discussion all the way around. We're going to talk about that here as we go forward. But let me tell you about guests that are coming up here in this hour and in hour 3 of the program first. So coming up in our next segment, we're going to have Samuel Hudson and I think a couple other folks in to talk about the Alaska VA healthcare screenings. We want folks to be able to be, to find out all that there is to know, especially taking care of our veterans out there. This will be a good discussion on what is going on, what's available, and what the Alaska VA is doing to help veterans out there. These healthcare screenings, I'm sure, are a good way for public outreach, and we've got all the details on this as we move forward with those folks here in the next segment of the program. Coming up in segment 3 of this hour, Nathaniel Herz from the Alaska Dispatch News will be joining us on his latest stories that are going on around the state and around the country. Specifically, we'll see if he's back in Juneau. He probably is. We'll be talking to him about exactly what's covered, what's going to be coming up, and what he is seeing in all of his reporting on Alaskan politics. So Nat Herz with the ADN will join us in the third segment of this hour. Then in hour 3, we're going to change gears a little bit again. We've got some headlines. The entire last segment of the show in Hour 3 is going to be consumed with your phone calls. We're going to just throw the phone lines open to talk about any topic that we've hit on today. And then at the bottom of hour three, we're going to be talking with Pastor Mickey from Frontline Mission. He is going to be joining us to talk about their Christmas in July food drive, which is going on this Saturday out at the Wasilla Walmart. It is a great opportunity to give. Frontline Mission does such a great job in helping out the community. They do so much with so little. I mean, it's like just the epitome of they're creating and getting meals to folks for just over $3 a day, right? $3 a meal. Just over $3 a meal. As I said earlier, I got a chance to kind of walk through their facility. I met with Pastor Mickey and Nanette, who is one of the directors there, who kind of oversees all the food distribution and everything else. And they've got a fantastic setup there, trying to take care of those who are struggling a little bit in the valley. And we all have times of struggle and trying to make things happen. And these folks at Frontline Mission are just doing some tremendous work out there in the valley. And here's how you can help out. This Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., they're going to be doing their Christmas in July food drive over at Walmart. And it's where you can come by and drop off, some food, canned goods, dried foods, whatever. And they're going to take it and they're going to use it to help feed those in need in the valley. I'm sure they're constantly looking for all this stuff. This is what they do. This is what they do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this Christmas in July is an opportunity for us to help out. So come on out and support the Frontline Mission as we collect food. Our sister station, Q99.7, is going to be broadcasting live from noon to 2 out there. And I know Eddie and Brenner are going to be out there doing their thing, collecting food. They're looking for things like peanut butter and jam, breakfast cereals, mac and cheese, canned fruit, canned soups, top ramen. I mean, whatever it is. I mean, what is it? Top Ramen is like, what, $5 or something? You know, just help out. I know one of the things that Frontline is always looking for is canned goods, because canned goods are one of the more expensive. They always run out of canned goods first, and if they have to go out and actually purchase canned goods or, you know, procure them from other food banks or everything, it's one of the more expensive items that they have to provide for people. So, you know, maybe a couple cans of Campbell soup. Or, you know, something, some green beans or, you know, whatever, canned corn. That canned food goes a long way to feeding families. Again, providing meals for just under $4. It's like $3.83 a meal or something. It's crazy what they're doing out there. Or non-food items. Maybe it's some toothpaste, toothbrushes, you know, nail clippers, laundry detergents, shampoos and conditioners, things that are helping people who are struggling. And again, there are times when we all have to a little bit of struggle. And looking at the AEDC outlook and what's going on out there in the state, yeah, it's going to be a little tough here coming up in the next few months. So now's the time to give back to the community with our Christmas in July. By the way, for you folks out there in the valley, a little bit of competition, if you know what I mean. Now's the time, because on Saturday, we're also going to be doing Christmas in July here in Anchorage, over at the Midtown Walmart, and we're going to be competing with our sister stations, KFAT, The Moose, Bob FM, on who could collect the most food, pounds of food raised. AAA Moving and Storage is going to be at both locations, and they're going to take the food, they're going to weigh it, and we'll get an amount to see who reigns supreme, Anchorage or the Valley. My money's on the Valley. I'm just saying right now, my money, maybe it's just, you know, that's what my heart is. So anyway, again, Christmas in July. So Pastor Mickey's going to be talking with us in hour three about the Frontline Mission, what they do, and the Christmas in July food drive. That's coming up in the second segment of hour three. All right. So two guests this hour, one guest next hour, open line, open forum. Let's get to some headlines, shall we?
Time now for Michael Duke's Bullet Points, your daily ammo drop for everything from water cooler discussion to cocktail conversation.
Now, I saw this story come out the other day. I think it was Tuesday, and we didn't really get a chance to report on it much, but they actually issued a Nixel alert on a door-to-door scam. And it was after the door-to-door scam is not the usual thing, not the books, not the security systems, not the other thing. No, it was door-to-door paving, which seems a little weird. But apparently it was due in part to the fact that one woman was scammed out of $72,000. Somebody showed up to her location, themselves Edwards Asphalt, and offered her a $10,000 load of, they had leftover, apparently, to pave her driveway for half price. After one day of paving, they showed up and said they gave her a bill, and she said, they told me it was $4,700. So we went to the bank, got the check for $4,700. They said, no, $47,000. She said, I walked back into the bank, got a cashier's check, and then they came back the next day and they sent her another invoice for $24,000. She paid it. I mean, God love her. I mean, first of all, nice to know that you can just draw that money out of your bank account, but who pays $72,000 for a paving job? That's insane. Turns out the company doesn't even exist. There's no phone number. I mean, the phone number and address go to like a UPS post office box. It's insane. So beware, Edwards Asphalt, coming out in Wasilla. Just tough stuff. There may be further ramifications for Lisa Murkowski's vote. Again, I've been saying this for the last 2 days, but I was more surprised that people were surprised on her vote rather than anything else. Well, it may not just be her taking a stand. There may be actual further ramifications on that. The problem, of course, is that the Trump administration is now threatening retribution over this, which is just kind of no more than you'd probably expect. Not only did he take to Twitter to try and basically beat down a little bit on Lisa Murkowski, which is totally within his rights. In response, the Trump's no holds barred style of governing is taking its next phase in the retaliation. According to sources, each of Alaska's two senators received a phone call from Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. This is being reported in the ADN, by the way. Received a phone call from Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke letting them know that the vote had put Alaska's future with the Trump administration in jeopardy. According to Senator Dan Sullivan, he said the call from Zinke heralded a troubling message. He said, I'm not going to go into details, but I fear that the strong economic growth, pro-energy, pro-mining, pro-jobs, and personnel from Alaska who are part of these policies are going to stop. He said, I tried to push back on behalf of all Alaskans. We're facing some difficult times. There's a lot of enthusiasm for the policies that Secretary Zinke and the president have been talking about with regard to our economy, but the message was pretty clear. From the Interior Secretary. He said that the Interior Secretary also contacted Murkowski. Now, Murkowski was not available for comment. But spokespeople from the White House and the Interior Department also did not return. This is a problem. This is not a problem. I mean, this is an issue. And now remember, again, the fact that everybody was surprised was the biggest surprise to me. Because I was not surprised by this vote. All you have to do is look at her track record. She actually reminded a reporter yesterday that she's not up for re-election until 2022. And that she thinks we should be governing. That's the thing. We need to be governing. And so that's it. But look at her track record. Her track record is get reelected, skew towards the middle, or maybe a little bit to the left for the first 2 years, and then spend the last 3 or 4 years tacking back to the right so that when they can bring up those early votes, she can say, yeah, but look at what I've done the last week. This is not a big surprise. I don't know why people act like this is such a huge surprise. But this is probably more of a surprise than anything else, unless, of course, you've kind of studied the temperament and the history of Donald Trump. You'll realize that this also should be no surprise, because he is really a take no prisoner kind of guy. If he thinks he's been slighted, he's going to take it out on you. And Alaska's been faring pretty well so far under the Trump administration. This might, though, be something that sticks with us for a while. We're basically going to be talking about what's going on in our local community with the VA, the Veterans Affairs. And we're joined right now by Samuel Hudson, who's the public affairs officer for the Alaska VA healthcare system, and Timothy Ballard, who's the director of Alaska for the VA healthcare system here in Alaska. Gentlemen, welcome to the program this morning.
Good morning, and go Navy.
That's right. Okay. See, now you got to start off with them fighting words, and you know how that goes. All right. So tell us a little bit about what's going on. We've got the Alaska VA healthcare screenings that are going on here in the state. What's happening?
So this Saturday, we've got an event out at our main campus at Muldoon. It's going to be a health fair, claims clinic, and a motorcycle rally. And so I've been on the job now for a year, taking care of Alaskan veterans, trying to get an idea of what they want across the state. And this was an opportunity for us to kind of open our doors to the public and for our veterans and try to get them involved. There's a lot of things going on at the event. We've got roughly 28 booths, all sorts of health screens, information on benefits. Any veteran out there who would like to sign up for the VA, we're going to have staff there to be able to do that. If they have claims or any questions about claims, there's going to be folks to be able to look up that. And we're going to look at some motorcycles and see what they've got. It should be an exciting event. Starts from 10 o'clock on Saturday till 2 in the afternoon.
Now, Timothy, pretty much any veteran is welcome at these kind of health fairs? I mean, this is a way for them to be able to get some screening maybe, or some checks that they have been putting off or just not been able to get to, or what's the skinny here?
Absolutely, and the public's invited also. The goal is just to make some health awareness out there for our veterans. A lot of our veterans may not be entirely aware of what their potential health benefits are and what we provide. And so it's an opportunity for us to be able to educate the public and our veterans on what we do, both in the healthcare system and on the benefits side. And while we're going to have some fun. We're going to have some food out there. And like I said, it should be a great event.
So, Michael, so one of the other things that the reason why we're having this is obviously Monday through Friday, a lot of veterans are at work.
Right.
So on this weekend, Saturday, it's an open day. And, hey, we're lucky because the weather looks like it's going to be good. But it's a time to have fun. It's a time to have fun and then also take care of the veterans. Because here's one of the beautiful things that happens. You know, a claim can take years to get completed. But there's a potential for a veteran to come in that's never been enrolled, to get enrolled, talk to a veteran service officer, put in a claim, get an exam, and then it goes to VBA, and it can possibly be adjudicated within 48 to 72 hours.
Right. So you're almost jumping the queue, so to speak, in some ways, getting a jump start or, you know, a kind of a rocket boost on a claim that maybe you didn't think was going to be possible or was being put off or, you know, being caught up in bureaucratic red tape. This might be a way to get a little bit of a head start on it there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then when you take into account just getting someone enrolled, getting them enrolled, getting the picture, then, of course, you know, we definitely have some veterans out there that are experiencing some billings problems. So we're going to have people there that can help people understand about the billing, to answer questions. It's not going to be your typical event where they're just sitting back. We're going to engage because it's time for us to go ahead and just say, hey, come back. We're doing the best that we can. We cannot change the past. But right now, just as the flyers say, it's a new generation. It's a new era.
Right. Well, and of course, you know, nationwide, the VA has been struggling. You know, a lot of problems. Again, you know, kind of the bureaucracy and scandals and I mean, everybody knows what's going on with that. It's been very difficult. And of course, the ones caught in the middle of all this are our veterans, you know, who are the ones that went out. They served. They did the job. They need to be taken care of. But it's good to see that, you know, we're starting to make some changes here to try and engage them more. You know, here in the state of Alaska and around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And so just a little bit of background. There's over 77,000 veterans across the state, and only 36,000 of them roughly are enrolled in our system. So there's a lot of folks out there that may have been disenfranchised by our services in the past, and we would love to be able to have an opportunity to bring them back in and try to take care of them. And so, you know, just in perspective, one of the big pushes for Secretary Shulkin is suicidality. 20 veterans every day across the country commit suicide. And of those 20, 14 of them aren't in our system whatsoever. And so it's very difficult for us to be able to provide the treatment and services for those veterans in crisis or in need without them taking the first step and coming on board. And so we want to engage the community. If you know any veterans in crisis that may not be enrolled, please let us know. Please get them involved so that we can do our part to take care of them.
And then, Michael, if you look at just all the sponsors that we have, we're talking Exxon. We have the Creative Designs. Then we have the Motorcycle Club, the Rough Riders, Second to None, the Veterans Combats. You know, then we're going to have a DJ there. I keep hinting that Dr. Ballard's going to get out there and maybe do a dance or two, but, you know, I don't know if that's going to work. My evaluation may go down, but, you know, 49 Entertainment. So it's just going to be, we're going to take care of business, do the business at hand, but also have fun at.
Yeah, because I heard a rumor that Dr. Timothy was going to be out there doing karaoke. That's what I heard. And
Hey, we had the microphones. Yeah.
We'll just hand him a mic, and next thing you know, he'll be singing "Do You Really Want to Hurt Me" by Boy George or something. It'll be fun. And now, Dr. Ballard, you know, look, this is, as I said, there's been a lot of problems. You've just, recently taken, as you said, just, you know, over the last year trying to do it. Tell us some of the things that are happening specifically here in Alaska to try and address some of the concerns and issues that, you know, that the VA has had over the years and some of the changes that you're making to try and, you know, to come up to serve this. Because Alaska is very unique. I mean, we have more veterans per capita than any other state in the country. Veterans love Alaska. And obviously, as you point out, there's a lot of them that are not engaged in the system. Now, that whether that's because they just don't know, they just don't think it's going to work for them. They've heard the horror stories. Maybe they've been involved before and they unplugged because it wasn't working for them. Let's talk about some of the changes that the VA is making as a whole and some of the changes that you're making to try and help engage these veterans.
Sure. Well, with as you've probably seen firsthand, as Secretary Shulkin has probably been about the most dynamic cabinet member of this generation with all the activities done. He's implemented an accountability program. He's promised same-day access to veterans. He's provided a website that shows access for every facility across the country. He's opened up mental health services for other than honorable dischargees. A myriad of things are going on. But when in Alaska, I think we've had a great program all along. And so, you know, as you said, we're kind of the square peg in a field of round holes. And so when it came to choice legislation, which was important for the lower 48 to make sure that veterans had access to care when it wasn't available in the VA system, we've been coordinating care with our Alaskan healthcare partners for decades. And going away from that with the choice program was a little bit difficult. And one of the things that we've been really pushing on is trying to get our arms back around that. So now we have Alaskan VA healthcare staff that are doing all the coordination for all veteran specialty care across the state. We would like to be able to take back the billing and reimbursement piece because, quite frankly, for healthcare providers out there, it is confusing between choice, the TriWest provider, and us.
Right.
We send referrals out in different ways, and oftentimes the billing process hasn't been always so smooth. So I'm trying to push to get an opportunity for us to take all of that back and be able to do it within our house, to partner with our community like we'd like to do. But, because we're sort of the odd man on the outside looking in when it comes to trying to standardize healthcare across the system, I'm fighting a little bit of an uphill battle, but we're making progress. We're hoping to get a consolidated budget to be able to have one pot of funds for all healthcare in the state for veterans, and that may be some progress here in the near future with some legislation going on with choice.
Well, and I applaud that idea. I mean, that to me seems to make the most sense because, again, I'm a libertarian for both you guys who know. So, I mean, smaller government, closer government to me is always better. And like you said, sending all this stuff outside to some faceless bureaucrat, you know, in Washington or Virginia or something who doesn't understand what's going on, doesn't understand the peculiarities or the vagaries of Alaska's healthcare system or our lack of choice a lot of times here in Alaska, and bringing it closer to home for the, you know, the billing and reimbursement and everything else, that seems to make the most sense to be able to bring that close because, you know, obviously the most responsive government, whether it's a bureaucracy or an actual government, is that's closest to the people who are being served.
Absolutely. And I want to be able to tell our veterans that they can hold me accountable for what's going on in the Alaska VA healthcare system. One of the great highlights that we just had recently is for the first time in 5 years, our Matsu Clinic out at Wasilla is going to have a physician working in there full time. And we were able to announce that this week at our town hall. So we're definitely making some progress. I'd say that the light at the end of the tunnel is significantly bigger than when I started. We've got a long way to go, and by all means, we have our warts. But we are definitely making progress to take care of Alaskan veteran needs.
Well, like you said, you can't necessarily look back. I mean, we got to look forward. I mean, we need to look back to know where we've been, but we've got to move forward. And it sounds like you guys are making all the right moves thus far to do that. And especially, again, the valley with the population growth and now becoming basically the second largest area in the state of Alaska, and more and more folks moving in, you know, every day. It seems like that's definitely a good move on your part. So the healthcare fair is coming up again this Saturday over at the facility in Muldoon. Samuel, what's the address out there in Muldoon? Where is it at located directly?
So it's going to be at 1201 North Muldoon Road, right across from Takatanu, right next to J-Bear, Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson, who's going to be out there as well.
Right.
We're going to have the Moose out there, Country Western, and my son Malik. So he's kind of happy about the Country Western. And I'm like, okay, rock on, brother.
Let you just do your thing.
Exactly. But it's going to be right there. And trust me, you'll be able to smell the hamburgers and hot dogs, see the motorcycles, hear the music, just the interaction.
Right.
We hope if you know a veteran that's out there, we ask you to hold his hand, grab him, and say, hey, give the VA another chance. Because, you know, you have that old proverb where it takes a village to raise a child. We need the village to help us take care of these veterans. And will
right.
we do it perfect? No. But our intent is perfect. It's take care of the veteran.
Right. And so this is really right now, I mean, what we're talking about, you and I and Dr. Timothy here, is an outreach to say, look, we know you may have been burned, or maybe mm-hmm. you heard all the horror stories, or maybe you just never bothered to do it, but now maybe is the time. Give the VA a chance to see what they can do with all the changes that are being made. Let's see if we can help out. So, again, just grab them by the hand, drag them down there, tell them I'm taking you out for a hot dog and lunch is on me. Come on out.
Exactly.
And get it done that way.
And we're going to have the people there to make it happen.
Right. What time are things kicking off? Give us a time and where folks can find more information and where they can get all the details.
All right. So it's going to be from 10 to 2 right there at the Muldoon. For the motorcycle riders, enthusiasts, kickstands are going to go up at 1 o'clock. You can find this information on our Facebook page, which is Alaska VA Healthcare System. You should be able to find it also on our website. We also have it at the C-Box. We have it all over the place, and it's going to be this Saturday, July 29th. So it's plastered. And then, of course, if you have any questions, definitely feel free to give me a call. And that number is 907-257-5490. That's 257-5490. And then quickly, any donations that is received is going to go to voluntary services. And voluntary services, which falls up under public affairs, that's the department that sends veterans to the wheelchair games, golden age games. We provide money for the veterans events and things of those natures. And it's not funded by appropriate. So I can't go to Dr. Bowler and say, Dr. Bowler, I need $5,000. He just looks at me like, hey, write a check. I'm like, okay. So that's where we have to just, you know, rely on donations. And we have a number of organizations and people that have been just with love giving. And so we're going to educate them as far as where this money's going, what it's used for.
Right. Well, and that's it. You know, we are some of the most giving people around, Alaskans, and giving back to our veterans is something that we do. Again, that's kind of what we are. We're a veteran state almost like no other out there. So it sounds like a good opportunity, 10 to 2, out at the VA facility out there at North Muldoon, right across from the Takotnu Commons. Dr. Timothy Ballard, Director of the Alaska VA Healthcare System, Samuel Hudson, Public Affairs Officer. We appreciate what you guys are doing. We thank you for reaching out to veterans and everybody else. And we hope that they're listening out there. We encourage folks to grab their friends and their fellow veterans and get them out there and enjoy a good day, free food, and maybe, as Samuel said, a jump start on your VA claim and you know what you need to get done. Thanks for coming in, gents. I appreciate it.
Naval power.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you coming in. The Michael Duke Show. Your home for Common Sense Radio. Got more coming up right here on AM 700 KVYR and Oldies 102.1. I'll give you diamonds
pride. Coming up next on The Michael Duke Show.
Up next, Nat Herz is with the Alaska Dispatch News. He's our intrepid reporter. He's probably down in Juneau right now reporting on the special session, which is supposed to kick off this morning at 11 a.m. We'll see what he has to say about that and other stories that he's been working on right here on your home for Common Sense Radio on Oldies 102.1 and AM 700 KBYR, The Michael Duke Show.
One-stop shop. We've heard it a million times. So much so, it's become cliched. But think about it for just a second. One-stop shop. If it's true, it means you only have to work with one company to meet any of your communications needs. From engineering to implementation, FCC licensing to radio procurement, you just have one number to dial. Everything in one place. Now, think about all the time you just saved, not having to deal with dozens of different people to get the job done. Think of all the energy you saved, and best of all, the peace of mind knowing that if anything, I mean anything goes wrong, there's only one person you have to deal with to get it fixed. Yeah. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? At North Slope Telecom, one-stop shop is not a trite phrase, not a buzzword. Nope, it's a mission statement, a thought process. Heck, it's a way of life. Meaning, when you need anything communication-related, North Slope Telecom is your one-stop shop. Sometimes too good to be true is just true. North Slope Telecom, 751-8200.
Thinking of a new car, truck, or SUV? Start your search at WasillaDodge.com.
Where you can shop and compare.
Value your trade-in.
Check great finance deals.
And more. It's the Summer Clears event at Wasilla Dodge, and our lot and website is loaded with great deals. Like this 2017 Dodge Journey.
With third row seating.
With just $15,888 after qualifying rebates. Or how about this 2017 Ram 1500 Crew Cab Bighorn?
With a 5.7-liter Hemi V8.
$14,000 off MSRP. Now just $33,880 after qualifying rebates. Shop WasillaDodge.com.
Online or on the lot.
WasillaDodge.com. You're going to love our prices.
See dealer for stock numbers. Ram MSRP $47,880. Price after $6,750 Lithia discount. $6,750 factory rebate. And $500 military rebate. Journey MSRP $24,330. Price after $34,42 Lithia discount. $4,500 factory rebate and $500 military rebate. Dealer required to verify eligibility of military personnel. Prices plus $10 tax, title, and license. Price includes $200 dealer dock fee. Offer valid through 7/31/17.
Are you getting a little tired of all the talk about politics? Well, who isn't? Now AM 700 KBYR has a way to help you take your mind off all that stuff and instead listen to something a lot more fun. I'm Michael Dukes, and this Saturday at noon, tune in to AM 700 for my brand new show, Finer Things. Its name pretty much says it all. I know, I'm a marketing genius. We'll talk about all the finer things in life. Those things you look forward to on the weekend or on vacation. Good food, superb beer, wine, and spirits, boutique hotels, travel destinations, experiences. We'll focus primarily on places and things available in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest, telling the stories of the people who create all this great stuff, their origins, their struggles, and more. Plus, we'll sample the wares, talk about the experiences, and basically start what I like to call that great social conversation that always seems to spring up around finer things. Tune in to AM 700 KBYR for an hour of deliciously entertaining radio with Michael Dukes' Finer Things. Every Saturday at noon, sponsored in part by Alaska Premier Closets.
This is a Bloomberg Market Minute. Facebook rising after its quarterly sales beat estimates. This is giving a bump to the NASDAQ composite. Staying with technology, Samsung's quarterly profit and revenue topped estimates. fueled by the success of its new Galaxy S8 smartphone. The S8 is helping the company recover from the Note 7 recall. Meantime, Twitter failed to attract more monthly users in the second quarter, spooking investors looking for evidence that the company is on a sustainable long-term growth path. Shares are tumbling in trading. Buffalo Wild Wings sees a bleak year ahead, slashing its earnings forecast. The company has been squeezed by higher chicken costs and lower sales. Shares have been hammered this year, down 28% year-to-date. And Starbucks is buying the rest of its East China joint venture in a $1.3 billion transaction, marking the biggest deal ever for a company that sees China as a huge growth opportunity. The move underscores Starbucks' bet that China will be one of the company's top sales drivers in the coming years. Courtney Donahoe, Bloomberg Radio.
That's why they call me.
Defending your right to be offended.
Hey, 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 nobody likes a smartass.
The Michael Duke Show on AM 700 KBYR and Oldies 102.1.
Welcome back. Little bad company. That's what we're keeping around here. We appreciate you coming in and joining us. Every day we dig into the stories that are important to Alaskans and folks around the state. It's what we do. And we work on that. We're hoping to hear in just a minute from Nat Herz from the Alaska Dispatch News. We'll talk with him about some of the stuff that's going on, see what he's working on. He's probably down in Juneau right now doing his thing down there, getting ready for the special session. We'll see if we can read. He might be in transit. We have no idea at this point.
It sounds like he's letting his phone ring and then hitting the "I'm very too busy for your phone call" button. So
I'm so sorry. I can't be bothered right now. He's probably getting ready for the big special session.
Yeah.
That's okay. If he calls in here in the next few minutes, we will. He's got a standing invitation. This is his normal day to come on. So if he doesn't, that's okay. We'll make it.
Well, if he's especially if he's getting in the session, we'd rather him get that information to bring back to us anyway.
Oh, no, absolutely. Now, again, I got a chance to look at the capital budget bill a little bit yesterday. And speaking of, let me pull it up here because I thought it was interesting. One of the first things that I noticed was that, The funding mechanism that they're using, to me, was one of the more interesting things. The funding mechanism that they're using is, instead of drawing it from, you know, like the CBR or the general fund, where it's going to require some cooperation. They are instead reappropriating a lot of this money from a lot of different sources. Including, we just finished up talking with the folks there at the VA, including they're going to be taking some money away from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs project. They were reappropriating $2.18 million from various Department of Military and Veterans Affairs projects for the Kivalina School Replacement Project. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of projects those are coming out of in there. They took a big chunk out of the Knik Arm Bridge project, which, they keep saying, oh, it's dead. And I know there's a lot of people who are bent out of shape about that. I just, quite honestly, of all the things that people could fight about as far as what government provides, to me, that is the one that is the most... It's really nonsensical because you've got a huge population. The second largest population center in the state resides in the Mat-Su Valley. You've got a single road that leads from Anchorage to the Mat-Su that sees an inordinate amount of traffic. I mean, just an inordinate amount of traffic. And you've got this single road system and a large number, I don't know if it's a majority or not, but I would say probably it's got to be close to approaching a majority of people who live in the Mat-Su end up commuting to Anchorage. I mean, I think the numbers were something like 50 or 60,000 cars a day going in to the Anchorage area from Mat-Su. That's a huge number. And I don't. I think that was the number. I have to go back and look. Maybe somebody can. You know the difference. Maybe I'm wrong. Hit me with a number if you remember what the number is exactly. But I think that's what it was. I want to say it was upwards of 50,000 cars a day coming in on the Glenn Highway. And you've got this area where you're going to have a, you could have a bridge that would shortcut that. I mean, first of all, it would make it a trip of, instead of an hour or 45 minutes to come in from Wasilla to Anchorage, from, you know, right there at the heart of Wasilla downtown, instead it could be done in 15 minutes, 20 minutes maybe. Secondly, you'd give people another option. I mean, I still remember back in, what was it, September 2 years ago, where they had that fatal accident on the highway. And they shut the incoming lanes down for 7 or 8 hours. I mean, you had people who were trying to get into to town to do work. You had nurses that ended up in town pulling double shifts because their counterparts were stuck on the Glenn Highway, not able to come in. And yes, I know it's going to cost money to build, but if the state is not there for one thing, infrastructure, it should be there for nothing. Infrastructure and public safety. Those two things, I guarantee you the state should be working on and providing. In fact, that's the one thing that we were promised at statehood that they've never really delivered well on. We still lack, one thing we lack in this state is we lack a tremendous amount of infrastructure. But this is, you know, this is where we're at. I'm throwing the phone lines open right now if you'd like to sound off. 274 5297 274 KBYR, toll free 866-610 KBYR. What else we got here? Reappropriation from the Juno Access Project for Kivalina. Again, reappropriation for the Department of Military and VA Affairs for Kivalina. Reappropriation from the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority. Reappropriation from DOT, DNR, AARC to Kivalina. I mean, it's just like, there's a huge amount of money to being reappropriated from all these various projects. A lot of them going back to K for Kivalina and for things like the ferry system and everything else. I didn't even see this line. Reappropriation of $1.2 million from ART on Alaska Class Ferries to the Alaska Class Ferries for equipment. You had $1.2 million lined out for ART on the ferries? What? Where are your priorities? Where are your priorities at that point? I just don't even know what to say. $22 million to fully fund the community assistance programs. Don't know exactly what that is. Again, I'm looking at the overview of the bill here. I really want to see what it's what's all included in that. What is going to be the final? What is going to be the final answer on that one? We'll take a look at it here. Reappropriation of $55 million from SB 74 for healthcare affordability. So they're going to move that over to try and offset some of the costs on that. Fully fund the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation programs as requested. Intent language relating to the replacement of the trusty tusty, or as some folks call it, the rusty tusty. We're gonna be watching the details on all this as we move forward here and paying close attention. Does not include the following, the work draft. Supplemental items that were approved in SB 57, the operating budget, does not include reappropriation for Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation funds, does not include additional appropriation for the permanent fund dividend. We'll see who adds that. We'll see who wants to add these things. All right, we're taking your call. Roy's on the line. He wants to talk about the Glenn Highway. Roy, what's on your mind, sir?
Hey, you know, I've lived in this state 40 years. No, actually 49 years, going on 49 years. August 2nd, I'll be 49 years here in this state. And the Glenn Highway has been the only highway in. Unfortunately, we have too gosh darn many tree huggers around here. Oh, or the NIMBYs. That's really what they are.
Because right, not in my backyard.
Yeah, we could have built that Kinnick Crossing, you know, 10, 15 years ago and had an alternate route. I love it when they put the sign up there, you know, this is happening, choose an alternate route. And you're going, yeah, right. What alternate route?
Which alternate route would that be? Would you like me to swim across the arm?
Yeah, but I don't have a canoe sitting down there on the shore. I can paddle across the, you know, yeah, Kinnick Arm there. And they, you know, and then they complain. And we had the state legislators also going on about the ruts in the road and things like that earlier. Oh, I drive my grandkids in there. I can't think of who it was. I don't think it was Kathy Giesel, but it was one of them. Oh, the grandmotherly type that, you know, her grandkids and the dangers of it all. And the fact that they started paving it and then they hung up and quit paving it. Now they started again, but it's I don't understand. Is that in connection to the capital budget, I wonder? Because, I mean, they went on repaving.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that had anything to do with the capital, the repaving of the roads and what they were doing. I think that was probably from monies that were already expended or allocated, because they had already started working on it and that the deadline for the federal portions of the budget are at the end of this month for the matches and everything else for the upcoming projects. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you on this whole road thing. I mean, it makes no sense to have a single access to, you know, the largest city in the state to have single access, especially when one community is a bedroom community of that. I mean, that's essentially what the Mat-Su is. Again, a huge portion of those folks are commuters coming into Anchorage. And part of the problem is, of course, is that Anchorage is so landlocked and the housing market is so tight that you can't look. When I moved down from Fairbanks, I said, I want to live in Anchorage because it's closer to the radio station. I won't have to commute, all these other reasons. I started looking and I realized I'd have to spend $35,000 to $40,000 a year just on housing in Anchorage for my family, the size of, you know, the number of kids I had and everything else. There was just no way that I'd be able to afford that. So, you know, of course, I had to, and I'm glad I did move out to the Valley because I like it out here a lot better than living in town. But, you know, you want to fix this. You want to open up Anchorage for more expansion. You want to do that. Put a bridge across, you know, get the Point McKenzie thing, get that going on, expand out there. You'll have more room. Move the airport out to Point McKenzie if you want. I don't care. Expand over there. Do what you need to do. But it's really something that we're going to have to do eventually. It's like the Bay Bridge, you know, they had to reach over from Oakland or wherever it was to it caused the expansion. That's what we have to look at it. They have to look at it that way. Roy, thanks for your call. Rose is on the line. She wants to talk about the voting on the budget and the PFD. Rose, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Hi, good morning. At 11 a.m. this morning, the legislators are going to be voting on the final budget, capital budget. And, I was told that we can contact representatives and let them know, and this is what to tell them. I want the full permanent fund dividend money to be restored in this capital budget for we the people.
Yeah.
And everybody just say that to them.
Yeah, you could do that right now. I mean, you should. I've been telling my legislators that from the get-go. That anytime we can get an opportunity to put it back in, and this is the last opportunity to get it back in before these dividends are distributed this year. And so, I think it's something that should be done. I would say that would be the one increase to the capital budget that I could get behind, would be putting in fully funding that dividend. Absolutely.
So contact them. They're going to be voting at 11 a.m. today. And just get on it, everybody. I went to the hearing, the senator's hearing, oral argument on June 20th,
right,
and 50 people showed up.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So
well,
people got to get on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So we can get our full amount.
Well, and I agree. You know, part of the problem is, of course, a lot of folks are working, doing things. I know a lot of folks are on the phone line doing that as well. You know, it doesn't help that a lot of times they're doing these things in the middle of the day when a lot of people are actually working at other things. And, you know, I know they're like, well, what do you want us to do? Do it on the weekend? Well, yeah, I'd like you to do it on the weekend when people could show up if they need to. Thanks for your call, Rose. Barry's on the phone. Barry, what's on your mind?
Well, it's kind of a roundup of subjects, shall we say. You know, the issue of transgender people in the military came up again.
Right.
And what I think a lot of people don't understand is that the American Psychiatric Society determined when I was majoring in psychology that those people are very disturbed, and they would not they required at least 3 years of psychiatric treatment before a psychologist or psychiatrist would sign off on body modifications.
Right.
So a lot of them went to Europe to cut that out, and still, they have real inordinately high suicide rate, even after their reassignment surgeries.
Right.
Now, in the military.
Barry, the music means that I'm up against it. I'm just going to say, I'm going to agree with you, Barry. Gateway Pundit's got a good article up about this. We'll see if we can find it and post it up, and hopefully we'll take this up in hour three again, okay? I'm sorry, Barry, but we're up against it. The Michael Duke Show. What do we got coming up in this hour? Pastor Mickey from Frontline Mission is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking with him about the Christmas in July food drive, which, by the way, is going on this weekend, both in Anchorage and in the Valley. I want to talk about the Valley one specifically because that's near and dear to my heart. The Christmas in July food drive is a chance for you to give back to the community. It's a food drive that helps those in need. We're going to be out at the Walmart in Wasilla from starting at 10 a.m., 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday. The folks at Frontline and from our sister station, Q99.7 Valley Radio, will be there. They'll be broadcasting live from noon to 2. And it's going to be a great opportunity to give back. Now, they're looking for some, you know, they're always looking for different kinds of food. Of course, the canned food is the best, right? The fruits and soups and vegetables and everything else you can find in a can. That makes it easy, shelf-stable, easy to use, easy to cook, ready, you know, that kind of stuff. The folks at Frontline do an amazing job. I mean, they're feeding people for as little as, it's like $3.80 a meal or something like that, which is just a tremendous, tremendous, you know, it's tremendously efficient. I checked out their operation here a couple of weeks ago, and they have got quite the deal going on over there. They do really good work. And this is an opportunity to help fill the larders coming up into the fall time for the food bank, for Frontline Missions food bank there, where they could do it. Again, the Walmart parking lot from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m., and we're going to have some great times out there, great fun, and it's a little bit of a competition. In fact, we're going to be competing with our sister stations, KFAT the Moose and Bob, who are going to be in Anchorage at the Midtown Walmart trying to beat us out as to who can raise more pounds of food. I think it's going to be the Valley personally. So why don't you help me out? That's my personal challenge to you folks who are listening in the Valley. Just swing on by. You know, grab a couple cans of Campbell's soup. Grab a, you know, by the way, canned food weighs more. So let's get that. I'm looking for every edge I can find right now. But canned food is really what they need. They also are always looking, of course, for other things, including non-food items like toothpaste and toothbrushes, shampoos, laundry detergents, you know, combs, brushes, nail clippers, all that kind of stuff. So go ahead and check it out and bring over your supplies, your canned goods. Walmart will actually have some prepackaged bags, by the way, available for sale at their check stands. So you can go in, drop $10, come out with a bag of food that you could just drop right in the truck. AAA Moving and Storage is going to be there to collect all the food, weigh it, and then deliver it to Frontline. So that's good stuff. And it's all happening this Saturday from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. With our friends out there at Frontline Mission in the Valley. And, of course, they're also doing it in town as well, in Anchorage as well. Christmas in July food drive. Make sure you head on out there and check it out. We're going to be talking with Pastor Mickey here in just a few minutes about Frontline Mission and their what they do, what the food drive does, and how they get things going on out there. In the third hour of the program, we've got Open Line, Open Forum. We're going to be talking about pretty much anything that you want to talk about. We'll take your calls. We'll also take calls here in this first segment. I've got some news stories that I'd like to get to, but Paul is on the line, and we're going to see what Paul wants to talk about. Good morning, sir. What's your topic this morning?
Well, I got a couple. I'm like a grocery bag. I got several items. I like to bring a bunch of stuff. But,
well, let's pick the top one or maybe two, and then we'll move on here. We got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, we sure do. We got a lot more than we can handle, quite frankly. Well, first of all, I'm concerned about what Murkowski done. And let's not forget that her daddy gave her this job. That was the first insult to the people of Alaska. But Donald J. Trump is a businessman, ladies and gentlemen. And what that means is, let me give you an example. One of our corporations had to walk in, tell 26 people, please pick up your personal things. We're about to lock the doors up. Now, Murkowski is messing with businessmen. This is not a man who concocts and contrives political statements are correct and doesn't offend anybody. He's there to do the public's business, and that man is in office because the counties of this great country put him in there, not the corrupted cities, okay? And here's what I'm very concerned about. Juno has got to end. It is in place only to divide us so that we can't be a family in a one government in Alaska. And I'm beginning to think that Donald J. Trump needs to just seal this state up. I'd shut this puppy down. I'd lock the lid on this stuff, and I'd make everybody stand up for what they're doing. Maybe we need to bring the state legislator to Anchorage and just get rid of the city council. For the kind of money I'm paying these people, $50,000 a year to work 3 months, sit on their ass, I don't do that. I'm a businessman. We don't do that kind of action. You're going to work all day. We're going to be able to see you folks 24/7, 365 days a year. Because if this is what these people are going to do, it'd be a tag team like some type of raptor or wrestling act. I'm fed up with this kind of stuff. Now, there's serious business to take care of. And this is the difference between men and women, by the way. Women's purpose is to nurture our inclination. I have to retract that. It is a man's place normally to hold order, accountability. And there are two distinct necessary foundations. And here I am holding up business in my country because some female wants another medical outlet for her proclivities. Now,
Wait a second. I'm trying to figure out exactly how you're trying to draw gender into this equation about governance. So,
I'm trying to show people how convoluted this has all become because of lack of leadership. Because we're not dealing with business, we're not dealing with priorities and essential services and correct dialogues that are accountable. We're getting a menagerie of things that are confusing us.
The problem is, again, okay, I'm going to put you on hold because I can't talk over you. So the problem is again, trying to draw – stay on topic, Paul. I agree with you. Let's get the session out of Juneau. Let's get the legislators here in Anchorage. Let's get the legislators here in Anchorage or Wasilla. I don't care. Somewhere within 20 miles of Anchorage core. Let's get them there. I agree with that. Running off of the pucker brush on a male-female debate or whatever. Yes, nature versus nurture, and men are the providers. And, you know, we've seen that this is that women are just as effective, can be just as effective leaders as men. I don't know necessarily what that has to do with anything. I agree with you. I'm frustrated. But again, you can't just say, well, we just need to abolish the city council. Do you really want a state government? Look at how well the state's done in running the state. You really want the state running your muni as well? Okay, that's not going to happen, first of all, because you got defined separation of powers. But, the fact that, let's delve into the realm of what is possible, what is practical, what is could potentially actually happen. Abolishing the city of Anchorage and having the state come in and run it, not going to happen. Moving the session out of Juneau into Anchorage or Wasilla or wherever, that is possible. Again, back to the practical versus, theoretical, having them do it themselves, not going to happen. They're not going to do it. They have no interest in doing that. Having us do it for them, having us put something out there that says you need to do it, very possible, very practical. So that's where we should be focusing our energy on as far as this goes. As far as Donald Trump shutting down the state of Alaska, is that what I want? Somebody who's going to be so punitive because one of our elected officials made a decision that I don't agree with, you don't agree with, that he doesn't agree with, that we're going to punitively penalize the entire state because of that? No, that doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, if you don't like, do something. If you want to be mad at Murkowski, which, you know, again, I don't know why everybody's so surprised. That's fine. But don't punish every citizen in the state of Alaska because of it. I mean, because there's a lot of folks out here that didn't vote for her. You know, that they voted for you, Donald J. Trump, is what I'm saying. So, again, it looks almost like a tantrum at this point. You're going to get about 20 seconds here to rebut.
Well, am I on the air now?
Yes, you are.
All right, thank you. Now that your diatribe's over and your rant, okay, of which I can't control the button, by the way, but I still enjoy your dialogue. I love, this is what men do, okay, at least they don't shoot each other. Now, I agree that I kind of mixed it up, but you can't have these contrasting positions. You can't say a female's equally and then treat her with some type of special thing here and deny what she is. Just try breastfeeding if you want to do something. The point is this, that we have to weigh all of these things. These things are pertinent contemplation considerations. And for you to suggest that Donald Trump is punitive, boy, I'd love to have you in argumentative, no holds barred on that discussion in the public arena. There's a serious business at hand here. And man, damn well I'll lock this state up, and then maybe the people that voted for that per person would suddenly realize what they're doing instead of just feeding off the fund and having a coffee and tea moment in Alaska. There are serious things that need to be addressed. And by the way, the two city councils, the two political bodies, I mean, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me they're not a tag team. These people are hanging out in Juneau screwing me, and the city council meets every 2 weeks, gives you 2 minutes, or they arrest you. You tell me how that's fair. That's what I'm trying
Okay. So you just went off in like 14 different directions in one thing. So let me say this. First of all, when you say you got to just lock down the state and when he said he wants to lock down, he should just lock down the state and we'll figure it out. You know what we call that, Paul? We call that dictatorship. We call that authoritarianism. And quite honestly, it's kind of against the fundamental principles of where this country stands for. That's the whole point. You're not supposed to give one man enough power to basically, if he is offended or disagrees with you, even just a mild disagreement, he could shut off everything to a specific state. We call that dictatorship.
I feel like that happened, like, I don't know, 70-some-odd years ago.
Yeah.
We dealt with that. Like, there's a reason we don't have to goose step into our office every morning.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of want to say that as far as, you know, the whole, again, trying to bring gender into this to me makes no sense at all. You know, men and women are very different. Of that, there is no doubt. But men and women are equal. That again, different natures, physiologically different, all the other thing else. But men and women, men and women are different. There's smart men, there's dumb men. There's smart women, there's dumb women. There's men who are leaders, there's men who are followers. There are women who are leaders, there are women who are followers. Why we have to try and inject gender into this, to me, again, makes, and I know you're saying you're trying to wrap it all up into, you know, this, and it makes all, it doesn't make any difference at this point. Yes, they're different. If you were making an argument about whether or what men and women should be combined on a frontline combat unit, that's a totally different argument because that has real relevance. As far as governance, it has no relevance whatsoever. I'm just going to say that right out front, Paul. No relevance whatsoever. And continuing to try to inject that into the conversation is, let's just say it's slightly misogynist. We're going to be working with Frontline Mission, our sister station, Q99.7 Valley Radio's out there. Going to be broadcasting live from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Frontline's going to be out there collecting food that they're going to use then to help those who are less fortunate in the Valley. Now, let me tell you, Frontline is a great organization that's done a lot of things. I got a chance to walk through the facility here a couple weeks ago with Nanette, and she gave me the nickel tour. I'll tell you what, pretty impressive operation. They are feeding people, a lot of families out there in the Valley from all walks of life, you know, people who are just having a hard time. This morning, we welcome to the program Pastor Mickey with Frontline Mission, who's here to tell us about the food drive itself and what they do out there at Frontline. We welcome him into the program. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning. Good to be with you today.
Well, it's good to have you on. Thanks for coming on and joining us. So let's talk a little bit about the food drive itself, and then let's get a little bit into the mission of Frontline, what you guys do, you know, what you provide, and then we'll round trip it again back to the Christmas in July event. So let's start it off with that and finish with that. Tell us a little bit about Christmas in July.
It's an exciting opportunity that we have in the Valley for connecting people that are less fortunate, those who are compassionate, have a compassionate heart. The idea of Christmas is it's the season of caring and giving. And so at this time of the year, the need for food and clothing for our people in the Valley never stops. And in fact, it kind of increases in the summertime as kids are not in school. They need meals. And so our meals pick up. And so it's a nice opportunity for those who are caring and giving in the Valley to connect with those who are less fortunate. It's an amazing opportunity.
Now we're going to be over there at the Wasilla Walmart from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. You guys are going to be collecting all the food. We're going to have AAA moving and storage over there. We're going to put everything on there. We're going to weigh how much so we can tell the folks in the community how much they've how much has been collected over the day, and then you guys are going to take that food back and help give it back to the community. And as you said, I mean, we're talking about whole families here that you guys are helping care for.
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing that, you know, people come to Walmart and they can go into the store and they can actually purchase a bag full of food. There's going to be pre-packaged bags for them to pick up and put in with their groceries or their purchases, and they can just bring them out and drop them off. And we will be there from 10 to 6 o'clock p.m. to thank them and to encourage them and help them understand how much we appreciate all the good that they're doing in our community.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's a simple thing. I mean, something as simple as, you know, I know going to the store now, I got four kids. You don't even want to see my grocery bill, right? I got four kids. Three of them are teenagers. You don't even want to see what my grocery bill is. But, so for me, you know, a couple extra cans of Campbell's soup or a chunky stew or some chili or vegetables or fruit, I mean, that's not really that big a deal. But two or three cans of food donated to Frontline in the Christmas in July, it goes a long way.
The idea of having Christmas in July and connecting people is an amazing opportunity for the community itself, because from Christmas to Christmas or Christmas to Thanksgiving and the different times that people have the idea of giving and caring, having an opportunity in the middle of the summer for them to come together and make a difference is an amazing thing.
Yeah. Well, I imagine, because I imagine giving is a very seasonal thing. Like you said, in the middle of Thanksgiving and around the holidays, you know, people are probably really into giving. You know, they're thinking, oh, yeah, you know, this is a good time of year and there are people who are less fortunate. I can give now. That makes sense. But, you know, again, May, June, July, August, probably not a lot of people. They're probably thinking about getting as much sunshine as they can. They're not necessarily thinking about helping out the community. So this is just a good reminder that, you know, year-round, people are still in need. And year-round, we can still give back, you know, even if it's just a buck or two, or even if it's just, you know, a few things like a tube of toothpaste or a packet of Top Ramen.
Exactly. You know what's interesting is that during the summer, we're in the fall, we're out there collecting, getting our fish for the year and filling our freezer with fish and game meat and the different things that we do in the summer. We're harvesting our gardens. Our energies and our thoughts are into taking care of what needs to be done for our families. And during that time, we can also take a moment out and say, hey, you know what? I can also share the great blessings that I've received with those who are less fortunate than I am.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the heart of it. We're all trying to, and we're some of the most giving people of the state of Alaska and, you know, especially, I think in the Valley, especially, they just seem to be so giving in so many ways, wanting to take care of the community. And this is just, again, one more opportunity to do that. And find out, you know, and to to help out. Again, so 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Wasilla Walmart. Now, we're in a little bit of I'm a competitive guy, Pastor. That's kind of who I am. I mean, I want to win. You know what I mean? And so not only are we doing Christmas in July in Wasilla, we decided to duke it out a little bit down in Anchorage. So they're going to be doing a food drive at the Midtown Walmart as well in Anchorage. And our sister stations are over there doing some of that. I'm telling you right now, I threw some bucks and said, you know, we're going to give this money back to the food banks and the charities, but we're going to beat you. That's what I said. I mean, it's bold words, but I fully believe that people in the Valley are a little more giving than people in Anchorage. And so we got to come out and represent.
Absolutely. We're an amazing community. You know, at Frontline Mission, we give out about 253 meals per week. And you multiply that, it's over 13,000 meals in a year. And it's an amazing thing. We give out clothing. We have an opportunity for them to do resumes on the computer. We have showers and laundry. We do everything that we can to help connect people. And we think about all the things that we're doing and giving and all of these things, but it's really about making connections. Those who are less fortunate, connecting to those who are compassionate and caring and giving. And so it's about relationships and building relationships. And it's amazing what happens at Frontline Mission.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Frontline Mission, their history, where they came from, what you guys are doing. And quite on some of the numbers, I mean, you just threw out one of the numbers. There was a number of people that you guys are feeding and the number of meals you're serving. But you guys are doing so much with so little. But let's talk a little bit about Frontline as an entity and what you guys do and what you stand for.
Well, you know, the idea that Frontline is about connecting the compassionate with the less fortunate, making relationships that are lasting, and it's amazing how people have come together in the community. And many people think that giving out food and taking care of those that are less fortunate are talking about people that really don't care about their life and they're just out for a free handout. The truth is that people come against hard times in every walk of life, and we see people that have just come, you've been unemployed and they're having a hard time. They come to Frontline and they get a meal, they get food to hamper. They come out and they're so appreciative. And so many people that have come to Frontline are now volunteering at Frontline. It's a place where people that have found help are now giving help. And it's an amazing opportunity for people to step up and make a difference in their world.
Right. Well, and we never know when somebody might be in need. I mean, I thought something that Nanette said to me really stuck with me. She said, you know, we've served people who are living out of their car, and we've served people who've driven up in a Cadillac or a Mercedes, because you just don't know when tough times can hit. You just don't know when, you know, you're going to lose a job, or maybe you're having a medical crisis and it's sucked all your money. You just don't know. And you're there to serve everyone. And to me, that's the biggest thing, because it can happen to anyone.
That's exactly right. And the thing is, at Frontline Mission, there is absolutely no judgment. You drive up in whatever vehicle, or you walk there, or you find a ride and get there by taxi or whatever. There's absolutely no judgment. The people that are at Frontline care about individuals. They care about people and their dignity and their pride. And it's an amazing opportunity for people just to really show how much they care and love. And this community is absolutely fantastic in going over the extra mile, going overboard to help people in need.
You guys, again, are doing a lot with a little. What was the number? $3.83 or something per meal is what you guys are providing?
$3.98 per meal.
Yeah, I mean, it's just imagine that. God, I wish I could feed my kids on that. You know what I mean? I wish you guys are doing so.
Amazing.
I started doing the math and I started counting them. Okay, three meals a day for each of you, $3.98 a piece. That's it. You know, but you guys are just doing so much with that money.
It's amazing how people come together and they donate and they give and give. You know, you can't even buy a Happy Meal for that. Isn't that amazing?
You
can feed a person for less than a Happy Meal, and it's amazing. And we're giving them good food, food that it's nourishing and healthy, and they're so appreciative of the help that they get.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and one of the interesting things I thought Nanette said was, she said, you know, look, we bring them in and people come in for, you know, a box of food for their family or whatever, and we don't just put them in a queue and make them stand in line and shuffle around. You know, we get them sat down. We feed them a meal while they're there waiting. Because, you know, a lot of times, especially if you're in need, you know what will happen, right? The mom or dad will come in. And they'll take that box of food, and they'll be the ones that shortchange themselves to make sure the rest of their family is fed. So the person that shows up is probably the one who needs probably a meal more than anybody else in their family at that point, right? And so just such a unique, you know, just think that kind of thinking where you're thinking about them in that way, to me, was just like, that struck me like, yeah, because I'd go hungry before I'd let my kids or my wife go hungry. So absolutely, giving them a meal while they're waiting for their box to be prepared is an absolute, I mean, it's genius as far as that goes. Some of the other things, of course, that Frontline does, not only are you doing Christmas in July and giving out meals all year, but you guys also have big events. You have a Thanksgiving meal that you guys do at the Menard Center, which is amazing. Yeah. You have the Christmas gift and a program that you guys put together as well. Tell us a little bit about those two programs.
Well, in at the Thanksgiving time, we have the meal at the Menard Center, and it's an amazing opportunity. And this will tell you a little bit about our valley and the people that are here. We need probably around 200 volunteers to accomplish the meal for Thanksgiving, and that tells you how many people actually show up. There are many, many people that show up for Thanksgiving meal, but we have to cap it. We say we're going to need 200 people. We'll cap it at 250, and we'll have 320 or 350 apply to be volunteers for that meal. We have an amazing community of people. And our Christmas time, we give out different things, gifts for kids and packages for the homeless. It's just an amazing opportunity for people to get together and put together packages and think about what's happening in the community at that time of the year. The community is an amazing place. This community that we live in, and I believe we will beat Anchorage, this community that we live in is very giving and generous.
That's what, you hear that, guys? The gauntlet's been thrown. Pastor Mickey says, yes, it's on, baby. It is on.
We're doing it.
Yeah, that's right. We're doing it. You know, look, it is impressive. I think it was Pastor Manoj and I were talking about this before, about the Thanksgiving thing. He goes, we've got whole families of volunteers that literally for the last two or three years have decided to give up their own Thanksgiving together in their homes to come down and serve the community and be with the people in need at the Menard Center. That's where they spend their Thanksgiving, serving those people and eating dinner with those people. I mean, it's just, it's tremendous. It is absolutely tremendous. All right, so we're running the clock down here. Christmas in July, this Saturday at the Wasilla Walmart. You guys have got a list of things that are available for folks to, you know, things you need, right?
Yes. And if they would go onto the website at Frontline Mission and go there and look at what's posted there. They can see what's happening at the mission. They can see what our heart is, and they can connect with those who are less fortunate.
Yeah, giving back in so many different ways. Again, folks, a little bit of a competition. The game is on. If you're driving around Saturday doing something, why don't you just swing by the Walmart, walk in, either buy one of those pre-bagged bags of food that Walmart's putting together, or just slide down the food aisle, grab a couple cans of Campbell's soup. Even that'll help. Some Top Ramen,
absolutely,
you know, a few things like that. A box of mac and cheese, whatever, and throw it out there just to show we need. By the way, canned food weighs more. So just let me say that right now. Canned food weighs more. So we're going to do this. We're doing this by weight, right? We're going to put it all in the truck. A&A is going to weigh it for us and deliver it to you guys. I mean, come on. We get canned food weighs more. So let's go ahead and do it. Let's get it done this weekend.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Pastor Mickey, Frontline Mission. We'll put links up. We've got headers up on our websites and everything else. You can check it out up there as well. Pastor Mickey, Frontline Mission, thank you, my friend, for coming in and joining us today. We really appreciate you being part. And we thank you to all you guys do out there.
Thank you so much for your help with this project.
I guarantee you we're going to be talking again comes Thanksgiving time as we get closer to this. We need to talk about the Thanksgiving meal and everything else. It'll be a good time for sure. Thank you so much, Pastor Mickey from Frontline Mission. The Michael Duke Show. AM 700 KBYR, Oldies 102.1.
Coming up next on the Michael Duke Show.
All right, one final segment. God, how do we get to the final segment already? Open line, open forum. Any topic is fair game. We're going to chit-chat with you. We can talk about state stuff. We can talk about city stuff. We can talk about, I don't know, great coffee. Did you hear about this coffee down in Texas that they recalled because it had Viagra-like substances in it? We can talk about that. Talk about giving you a little lift in your coffee. Anyway, we're going to have that and more. It's all directly ahead. Your phone calls, 274-5297, 274-KPYR, right here on the Michael Duke Show.
Sweet summertime.